When it comes to weight loss, no two people are the same. That's why Noom builds personalized plans based on your unique psychology and biology. Take Brittany. After years of unsustainable diets, Noom helped her lose 20 pounds and keep it off.
I was definitely in a yo-yo cycle for years of just losing weight, gaining weight, and it was exhausting.
And Stephanie. She's a former D1 athlete who knew she couldn't out-train her diet, and she lost 38 pounds.
My relationship to food before Noom was never consistent.
And Evan, he can't stand salads, but he still lost 50 pounds with Noom.
I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. Even through the pickiness, Noom taught me that building better habits builds a healthier lifestyle. I'm not doing this to get to a number. I'm doing this to feel better.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom users compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Adventure on W4CY Radio.
Wake up, America! It's time for the Adventures of Hype Man on W4CY.com, West Palm Beach's number one internet radio station. Here's your host, the Hype Man.
This is the Pipe Man here on the Adventures of Pipe Man W4CY Radio, and I have a really great guest coming up now that I'm so happy to have on, not only because of the music, but also because of the cause, because that's so much more important. And as everybody knows that listens, we have a station here dedicated to health and wellness. We have a station here dedicated to cancer, and this artist has something to say about cancer. So let's bring on Rachel Sage. How are you?
I'm good. How are you doing today?
I am doing absolutely amazing. I got to tell you right off the bat why there were two big reasons you were picked for us to do an interview with.
Oh, yeah. Bring it on. I'm curious.
Okay. So the first one is, my daughter's name is Rachel. The person that works for the station that is going to be editing this interview, her name is Rachel. Both of them spelled the same way as you.
Well, as we say in Hebrew, it's beshert. It's meant to be.
Yes, absolutely.
Fabulous.
It is, because it's so amazing, like having three people connected in this one interview with the same spelling of Rachel. Because
that is amazing, especially since 99% of, you know, presenters always misspell it for me, and I never hold it against them. I know it's quirky, but that is unusual. You're absolutely right.
And you can't get like keychains at Disney.
So true. Oh, my goodness. Well, maybe that's something that Empress Records and I should make just for you then.
There you go. I love it. So tell us a little bit about you. Let's start there.
Sure. Well, I am a New York-based singer-songwriter and record label owner, as well as a producer and a visual artist. So I wear a lot of hats and I spin a lot of plates, but, you know, ultimately I'm just a very hyper-creative person.
Nice. I like that.
Yeah. And what else can I tell you? You know, I have the great pleasure of not only being able to create my own work and release that as I see fit ongoing, but also to mentor and encourage other artists on my label. So, you know, I come at this eclectic business from many angles, and I'm always learning and hopefully growing.
So I really love your story as the second reason why, and the more important reason why you're on here today, because like you heard, and you didn't even probably know this, neither did the publicist, but you know, I own multiple radio stations here, and one of them is an all cancer station. One is an all health and wellness station. And so, yeah, and you have a story having to do with cancer. So why don't you tell us that story?
Yes. Well, essentially in early 2018, I was diagnosed out of the blue at a routine exam with endometrial adenocarcinoma, which is essentially uterine cancer, a very specific type, but it happens to be the most common among women. And yet I had never heard of it. So it was all very much a shock. And, you know, I found myself just suddenly trying to learn as much as I possibly could about my own condition, my own diagnosis, and to try to apply, you know, all the same dedication and sort of fortitude I've always really focused on my career and my business to the business of healing. So that's really what happened. And in the months to come and in the couple of years since, I, thank goodness, have gone into remission, and I've learned so much about this form of cancer. And I decided to do an event this past September called Bravery on Fire to help educate women and those who love them about all forms of gynecologic cancer. So we did that just a few weeks back.
Wow. So let me just ask you.
Sure, you can ask me anything.
I love it. So, you know,
I wouldn't have said that 2 years ago, but now I've talked about it all so much. I really like to be open about it, and I hope it helps people.
That's good, because that is, you know, when people can experience it, because you can't really understand sometimes unless you experience something. You could tell somebody, but unless you experience it, and it's kind of, I don't know, it's, I would kind of think it's kind of a strange feeling when you find out about that. And, you know, the stages that you go through in your mind, mentally and emotionally.
Oh, yeah.
So
absolutely. I mean, I remember being very much in kind of a compartmentalized sort of overdrive. And thank God that we have that wherewithal in ourselves. And I don't really know exactly where it comes from, but I know that part of it comes from the love that we have from our families and our friends. But in my particular case, I chose only to tell my very, very close loved ones. And I decided to wait until almost a year in to share it with my listeners and the broader world, because I just felt like I had to get through it, you know, and I know that that's not unusual, but it's what I had to do. And I think it was the right choice for me, because like you said, it is so overwhelming. And it's a very surreal kind of out of body experience when you hear that you have it, and then it becomes very, very real day to day once you're in treatment and you've made the decision to follow a certain path medically, which in of itself is very kind of traumatic, because, you know, in the case of chemotherapy, and someone like me especially, who's so holistically minded and very integrative as far as medicine, you know that you're putting poison in your body to try to save your life. It's very convoluted on paper, you know, and yet they present all these options and statistics to you, and you just try to make the best, most informed decision you possibly can, just like with anything else in your life. You really do end up learning more about yourself and distilling the way you think and the way you are and the way you love, and just, you know, the way you do everything and have done everything becomes very compressed when you go through cancer, I think. And there's a silver lining to that as well, as you may imagine. You kind of get rid of the things in your life that don't serve you, and you really end up focusing on the things that hopefully do.
Yeah, you know, there's a few things I want to focus on there. And that last one for sure is one thing, because, you know, I don't know, leading up to something like that happening in your life, you kind of feel like invincible, and you kind of feel like there's always tomorrow. Oh, I can do that tomorrow. I could do that next year, you know, and even with this pandemic, like it's like,
Oh, so many parallels, right?
I mean, you know.
It's like the whole world is going through cancer. Right?
I know, right? Because it's like there's things that you were like last year, oh, I'll do it next year. Now this year we can't do it, you know, and you just never know. And then so there's that part of it. And then there's the coming out of it and realizing, you know, like every day, just live it to the fullest because you just never know what tomorrow may bring.
Very, very true. And there's also, I mean, I'm really focused on duality in my life and in my spirituality as well. And I think it's been very helpful for me personally. But there's also a flip side to what you just said, which is that New York kind of hyper-tensive energy of being in a rush. And, you know, everybody is very driven typically in a big city. And people have flocked there in the past to make their dreams come true and sort of turn up the volume and just make, do, you know, achieve. And that's, in a lot of ways, that's very healthy for an artist because you strive and you accomplish. But there's a lot of stress that accompanies that kind of lifestyle too. And I think the key takeaway for me between what you described, the sort of carpe diem, seize the day, and the other extreme, which I think I was already on that path. I really did live every day to the fullest before all of this, but I had very little balance in my life. I really rarely just chilled out, did some yoga, took a walk in a park. Like that wasn't really me at all. And I've learned a lot about all of that and how to balance what seems essential and urgent, but really may not be, you know. So you do a lot of soul searching and kind of rearrange your priorities in a lot of ways.
Yeah. And you were talking about too, like, that's really where you kind of find out where people are in your life. Like I don't blame you for only keeping it tight and close to the belt because for no other reason of other people's vocabulary entering your head, you know,
it's true. Yeah.
Everybody's
and
got
a lot of
something
people feeling sorry for you. And maybe that's the exact opposite from what you need. Maybe you need to just feel like, you know, as positive as you can and everything that anyone says to you or sort of gives to you energetically is either going to roll off of you if you have that wherewithal or really manifest and kind of, you know, impact the way you feel. So no, you're absolutely right.
Yeah. And then, you know, there's the other part about the holistic part. So that's all me too. I'm all about natural health. But then there also comes a point in time that when you're in that situation, that could be a dire situation.
Yes. Sometimes
you go, well, you know, do I play Russian roulette or not? And I've
that's
gone
right.
through that myself because I've treated myself with natural health my whole life. Mm-hmm. And then like a couple years.
I have too largely. So I feel you.
Yeah. And then a couple years ago, I had a heart attack surfing in Hawaii.
Oh, my goodness.
And then I had a second one surfing in Costa Rica a year later.
So, you know, that I mean, the thing that Western medicine is best for is a crisis. You know, it's less proficient at prevention and more at dealing with the head-on crisis once it has arrived.
Exactly. And then, you know, I have my viewpoints. And when I was even going through that situation, you know, my son was with me. And, you know, I'm questioning the doctor about all things.
I'm glad your son was with you.
Because he's the opposite. But he's the opposite. It's so funny how the younger
generation.
My family's
the opposite, too. So you had that polarization there. You were probably arguing with your own son, right?
Oh, yeah, totally. Because here's what happened. I'm in the hospital, and the cardiologist doesn't come and see me. They're just going to take me down and do something to me tell me anything.
That's a nightmare.
And I'm
like, sorry that happened to you.
I'm like, nope. I want to talk to a cardiologist, I have questions. And my son was like, Dad, just do what they tell you to do.
Oh, I know. And they mean well.
Yeah.
But it's, yeah, no.
So I said to him.
I had the same thing. Wow.
I said to him, nope. I'm like, I want to know all the details before I make a decision on what they do with my body. And it was also in that moment, in that whole thing too, that I actually thought of the concept of, you know, cancer being something that I could go through because, you know, I was a smoker for like 36 years. I just had a heart attack. You know, it has been in my family. So I remember saying to my son, I'm like, I'm telling you right now, if I ever get cancer, I'm not doing chemo. I'm not doing radiation, period. Wow. But going back to what we're talking about with you, I'm not in that situation yet. So when I'm in that actual situation where I have to make that choice, is that the choice I'm going to make? And, well, you know, it could depend.
You know, I made a point, like, you know, it's interesting. You probably, maybe you've heard of Fran Drescher's Cancer Schmancer organization, which is very holistic in nature and always focused on prevention and trying to catch all these gynecologic cancers and, you know, other cancers at stage zero, so that it's really just about kind of nipping it in the bud and not having to go through all that, which is amazing. Sometimes that's, you know, we don't have that luxury. And in my case, I thought I was in perfect health and they, you know, found this very large tumor and it was diagnosed as stage three at that point. And I did do my diligence and I got more than one expert. I think it was up to four at a certain point, to weigh in and give me their best advice. And I looked for the overlap. There was some variation, but every single one said that if I didn't act immediately and swiftly to have the surgery and at least the radiation, you know, it would not be a good situation. And it would, even if we were able to somehow mitigate it, it would likely come back. And the last thing you want to think about when you're at the beginning of that kind of trial is having to go through it again. You know, you do, it is, there's a lot of math and a lot of kind of faith, but I really tried to just enlist my logic and think as clearly as I possibly could. And like you, I didn't put it on anyone else to make these decisions for me. But I did have a very similar experience with a doctor at an unnamed hospital who was supposedly, quote unquote, the best and highly recommended by this and that fancy person to me. And I had the worst experience and they wanted to immediately do a very invasive procedure that I didn't need just in their office as, you know, as an initiation there. Wow. And I didn't need it. And I'd already done it. And I, you know, I was so kind of bulldozed by this person and their staff that I did do it and I regretted it. And it was very uncomfortable and it was a real, you know, teaching moment that you do have to always go with your instinct. It's your body. You know it best, you know, get as much information as you can, but the word no definitely has its place.
Yeah. And you can't make an emotional decision. And like, you know, in my case, a perfect example is the second heart attack was caused because they screwed up on the first one.
Wow.
So maybe I should have listened to my normal natural health instinct and be like, nope, you know, but you're in a situation where it's like, you could die. Yeah. You could die. So, you know, do you want to take that chance? And that, you know, and that's where I like what you're saying, that you know, went over everything in your head.
I probably Googled like 100 hours in a week. I mean, really. And I look back and I don't think it was extreme. I think I had to do that because all of a sudden you want to become the best possible patient you can be, the most informed. It's kind of like cramming, you know, to present a thesis in college or something. You just want to, I mean, that's how I approach it very academically. And I think it also helped me not feel sorry for myself and helped me be a little bit more functional and less despairing because I knew there were options and how fortunate I was to even have those options available to me. I had insurance, and whether or not it was as comprehensive as it may have been, you know, I had it. I had parents who loved me unconditionally and on a certain level, you know, that maybe they pressured me to do this or that type of protocol, but they certainly wanted the best for me. And those are huge blessings when you're going through something like that.
Oh, no doubt about it. And yeah, I mean, if you're going to make a decision like that, you might as well make a very well-informed decision. You know, the little bit of time that you're going to invest in researching is not going to change the outcome. So you might as well be 100% sure that you made the right decision.
Definitely. And you know that in a way, that's also only the beginning, your treatment. Then you get to the other side of it and you have a lot of decisions to make about how much, you know, you'll adhere to certain premises about prevention and diet and exercise. And there is so much that is within our control with regard to how we recover and how we respect ourselves after, you know, if we get lazy. And I am not one for extremes, but I have learned a great deal about just how the body works, how stress impacts us, and, you know, cancer prevention in general. So with that event that I mentioned, Bravery on Fire, which is still up and can be replayed at braveryonfire.com, we made a point to not only have a lot of entertainment, but also we had medical professionals speak and really give us a lot of concrete information about prevention. So it's something that I encourage anyone who has women in their life about whom they care, you know, to share it and to learn. There are things in there that if I had known sooner may have very well impacted, you know, my own diagnosis and so forth. So it was a real luxury to be able to create it, and hopefully it does help save some lives.
Well, awareness is definitely a key word. I think we all need to have as much information and awareness as possible. And like you said, yeah, in some ways, you know, to be able to sometimes prevent it, sometimes manage it, whatever it may be.
Yep. I mean, you know, for instance, I had absolutely no idea what the symptoms even were of the type of cancer that I had. So, you know, in my mind and colloquially, I say I had no symptoms. But digging a little bit deeper, the more that I've learned, I realized that I kind of did. I just didn't know how to identify them or quantify them enough to haul myself in earlier to get them checked. So things like that.
Well, it's interesting you should say that, because that's another thing. When you have like something like that happen, or like a heart attack happen, you know, you have a little different philosophy. Before, it was like you would get a pain and call it a normal pain. And there really is no normal pain, but we're like that. And then it's, you know, you never think anything of it. And then after the fact, then you become more aware. And it's like you get this pain, like, oh, maybe, like, because that first heart attack for me, all I had was like a little tinge in my left arm. I didn't have the dramatic thing that you see on TV. And so I just figured, you know, I'm in Hawaii, the weather, I mean, the current is strong. I was paddling a lot, you know, I just, you know, pulled a muscle or something. It wasn't that bad. It was no big deal, you know. And so, you know, and even the second one, which was massive, I mean, I was surfing again and I just thought I was tired. And so I caught like 3-4 waves having a heart attack.
Wow, that's extraordinary. You're a walking miracle. You really are. I mean, same thing with me. You know, I went for this exam and they thought they found something, but I was still waiting for the test to come back. And I thought it was not going to be anything significant. We were just, quote unquote, you know, being safe. And I got on a plane and I flew to Arizona and I played a festival in 98 degree heat. I felt great. It was like one of the best gigs of my life. Little did I know I wouldn't get up on a stage like that again for, you know, almost a year. So,
wow.
Yeah. I mean, I think the key, like you said, now is we've gone through something like this. So we have learned a lot about how to listen to ourselves. And I think not only physically, but also mentally, I've learned so much about how the mind does have so much power and impact over how we recover from these things, our attitude.
Yep.
And as you said, the people you surround yourself with and the positive energy. So.
Totally. And, you know, like you were mentioning about New York, I mean, and that's just how life is. And I'm originally from up there, too. And it's like you just keep going and going and going and going.
You really do.
And you don't really have time to stop and be sick, you know. And so when it does happen, it's like you just slammed on the brakes.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, I recorded one of my albums with pneumonia after, like, with walking pneumonia after 9/11. Of course, everyone got sick downtown and we all had pulmonary issues and the air was terrible. And I was just cranking away, going into the studio, doing vocals and making music. And I thought that that was sort of the best thing I could do to heal myself. But really, I probably needed to get away for a week and sit on a beach or under a pretty tree in the sun, you know.
No doubt.
I didn't think like that back then. So.
Well, yeah, listen, when I was in my 20s, I would work with like pneumonia, 104 temperature. And I was like, I was always proud of it. You know,
yeah, I was too. I sort of wore it like a badge of honor.
That's what I was just going to say. It's like You wear this badge of honor that you were able to work through all these different sicknesses and diseases and not slow down. And, you know, maybe that wasn't the best move.
Perhaps not. Yeah. I think I learned that, you know, philosophy early because I remember getting mono as a kid. And I remember my mom and I like leaving the doctor's office and she was like, "Do you really feel that sick?" And I was like, "Not really." She's like, "Do you still think you can go to Nutcracker practice tomorrow?" I was like, "I think so." You know, we just like powered through it. And, you know, we were just in that culture at the time. And thankfully, I've learned a lot about it now. But, you know, with COVID, it's really hit us all in the head, you know, how much, just basically where you started this whole conversation, how you never know how precious life and our loved ones are.
Yep.
And just to appreciate all of it as much as we possibly can.
I think a knowledge that you would have and a lot of people like you and myself as well for this COVID is, mm-hmm. I think my attitude towards COVID would have been a lot different had it been 3 years ago.
Like, me too.
I would have been invincible and like, who cares type.
Oh, wow. See, I would have been the opposite. I would have been like, oh my freaking goodness, like despair, like will we ever get out of this? I wouldn't have known how to function because I would have felt the loss of what I had, what I missed even more deeply than I do now. And I feel it pretty deeply, but I've been through something where everything was put on hold for about a year. I remember when the doctors told me this will take a year. Do not expect less. And I was like, I don't understand. You're saying I have the surgery in April. I have the chemo in June. You know, why won't I be able to get back up on a stage by, you know, August? They're like, no, you don't understand. And, you know, I'd just never been through anything like that where you needed that recovery time.
I think a year is a thing, by the way, because...
Say that again, sorry?
I think a year is a thing, by the way, because they said the same thing with the heart attack, and then I had the second heart attack as soon as they cleared me after the year.
Oh, my goodness.
Like, literally. Like,
sorry. How are you now? Are you...
Here's the funny and good end of the story, okay? So, like I said, I had the heart attack in Hawaii surfing, and then a year later, had a heart attack surfing in Costa Rica. And then this year I got cleared again and I went back to Costa Rica and I surfed and I didn't die. I didn't get a heart attack. And then I came home and got locked down for COVID.
My friend, I had a similar trajectory. You know, I had just gone out on tour with Howard Jones. It was kind of my celebratory comeback tour. I was just elated to get back to it and had just put out a record like days before COVID started. And so many of us are, you know, had that experience. It's really been humbling, hasn't it?
Yeah, you know, I always feel bad for artists. Like I go on tour doing radio coverage for all these festivals across the country. And like, I was coming back from Costa Rica because my season was about to start, you know, and mm-hmm. festival season was about to start. And then it was like really weird because while I was in Costa Rica, you know, it's off the grid, so you don't get too much news. And I just remember they were saying Ultra was being postponed. And I'm like, that's like the biggest.
I remember that too.
Yep. Yeah. And I was like, oh, that's weird when that happened. And then Coachella got postponed. And I'm like, uh-oh.
South by Southwest, yeah. I was same thing. My last gig that I did with Howard was in Pittsburgh. And I remember we were all in the green room already at that point, not hugging because of what we'd heard on the news. But we'd just played a show with a half full audience where the venue had only let in 50% capacity, even though it was sold out. And, you know, my friend was texting me, don't go out to the merch table, don't shake anybody's hand, don't use anybody else's pen. And I was like, wow, this is for real. It was all very strange, but
it's surreal.
I think we're
for
all
sure.
too used to it now, aren't we?
Yeah, it's a little surreal, and I can't wait to get back to live music.
I know. I dream about it every night.
I don't know, I play gigs all the time
in my sleep.
There you go. And I don't know how you feel about it, but the whole idea of a drive-in concert without even the person performing live is kind of weird to me. I'll just sit home and watch that
on my TV. It is a little weird. I've been doing the live stream so very regularly, like religiously, since the day this started. Every Sunday night, I play at 6 p.m. for my fans on Facebook. And
nice.
I've got people tuning in from all over the world. You know, it's like Bulgaria and Israel and England. And, you know, a lot of times I don't feel like doing it. You know, frankly, I'm just like, oh, this is, it's so hard to always know what place you'll be in emotionally that day, like whether you're in the mood, whether you're not. And in a much different way from when I used to do regular gigs. I was always in the mood to do a regular gig and I couldn't wait. But now, you know, our lives are just structured differently and I'm alone, completely isolated, kind of self-quarantined. So I don't have, you know, like a tour manager in close proximity to be like, all right, see you in the lobby in an hour. You know, the motivation has to come all from me. But I will say every time I hit that button to go live, and I see those people start to pop up and they send their little hearts and they tell me where they're tuning in from. And I look at my phone between the songs and, you know, they've got the virtual clapping and telling me what songs they'd like to hear. It always energizes me and motivates me and makes me feel less alone and just like I still have my job, you know. So I've stuck to it and I'm going to continue to do it. And I'm grateful to have that practice.
I think that's amazing. And could you have ever imagined before this that you would be doing that and the fact of what you get from it? Because I think it is probably cool when you're sitting there performing, and, you know, you see all those hearts like popping all over the place on the thing. It's kind of cool.
It is. And, you know, after the show, I'll just go back to that thread and like them all and just, you know, seeing where everybody's zooming in from. It's kind of incredible the way our industry has adapted even to that extent. But of course, I know you and I can't wait for live music to resume, but we have to be patient and smart and careful.
Oh, no doubt. You know, it's weird. There, what was it? I think it was in June. I had one of the promoters say to me, you know, we're thinking of still having this festival in August, and would you be willing to come? And I'm like, yeah, I don't know about that. And I never say no. I never say no, but I'm like, yeah, August would be a little too soon.
Yeah, there are a lot of people in unfortunate denial, and we know that. And it's not hard to understand why. I mean, I always have empathy for all the people making poor decisions. I just don't want to follow suit. You know, you need to really kind of forge your own path if people around you start breaking ranks with sanity, you know?
Absolutely.
That's a lyric, isn't it?
I think it might be. So speaking of lyrics, let's talk about your latest single, Open the Door, and the new album, Character.
Yes. Well, it's slightly different. Open the Door. So Open the Door is a song that actually is written by the great Judy Collins. And I've had the great pleasure of touring with her in the past and we became friends. And I don't really know exactly how it happened. It's too long a story for this program, but I'm just so delighted to still have her in my life. And she gave me her blessing about a year ago to cover that song after I performed it at a tribute concert in New York for her. So that's my latest single, and it's really all about welcoming friendship and positive human, you know, interaction and support back into your life, perhaps after you've been on another journey that precluded that. So in her case, it was one story. In mine, it really related very directly to my cancer recovery and to my best friend. Her name is Meredith, and she also helps me run Empress Records. And in a lot of ways, she was a huge part of why I recovered so well, because she you know, was just right there with me every step of the way, along with my family. But, you know, there's nothing like a best friend. So
absolutely.
So that's that song. It's a little bit more twangy, kind of has an Americana feel, which is a little different for me. And I hope I did it justice. And yeah, the album Character, is the rest of it is mainly originals. And it is, in fact, a chronicle of my recovery and also my joy and exuberance to be getting back into music. So it starts out, you know, very hopeful, and off the bat, I'm presenting myself in that place of gratitude and just, you know, sheer over the top enthusiasm for life and the gifts that are all around us that sometimes we forget to notice. And then you kind of get deeper into the record and, you know, go back to some of the points of, I don't know, complexity, I guess. And I do think ultimately it's a very positive, redemptive album.
It is very good. So I definitely say our listeners should go and check it out for sure. And how do they connect to you on social media, get your music, get your merch, sure, all that good stuff?
Yes. Well, I try to be as accessible as I can. My main website is rachelsage.com. And as we discussed, I spell Rachel the quirky way, rachelsage.com. And then, of course, I'm up on Instagram and Twitter and Facebook. And if there's anywhere else I should be, y'all let me know.
TikTok.
I'm getting there.
A lot of artists are actually going there, but it is the thing. It's pretty funny.
It's its own whole labyrinth of learning curve for someone, you know, over 15.
Yeah, it is definitely.
And my staff keeps telling me I need to get on there, and it's on my list.
You know, I look at this stuff and like some people are really, really creative on there, but like they're putting in like 10, 12 hours for a 1 minute video. I don't have that much time on my hands.
Yeah, I don't either. I'm running a business. I'm, you know, working with other artists, but maybe over the holiday, I kind of hope people take a holiday, even though everyone's at home. But if people take a holiday, even if just they stop working, then I have less email to do, and then maybe I can learn TikTok.
There you go. And so why don't you also once again mention how people can listen again to the concert, the benefit for Women's Cancer Awareness. And are you still raising funds for Foundation for Women's Cancer?
We are, yes. We've already raised about $7,000 for that, and we just sent them that check a few days ago, and that website will stay up in perpetuity, and we'll probably do it again next year with some different artists and guests. So again, that's braveryonfire.com, and there's so many great artists involved, from Paula Cole to Lisa Loeb, and it was a great event, and it will stay up there, and I really hope that people go and check it out.
Beautiful. I hope they do too. Do you have any final words for our listeners?
Sure. Well, this is my birthday week. So my big birthday gig is coming up for next Monday, November 23rd. And it will be at 7 p.m. Eastern time on Facebook Live. And all the information is on my website, rachelsage.com.
Nice. All right. A birthday show. I love it.
Yeah.
Well, happy birthday.
Thank you so much.
Well, thank you for all you do. Not only your talent, but your giving awareness to the world and helping with great causes.
And likewise, thank you so much for having me on your show and for, you know, keeping such a positive outlook. I really appreciate what you do.
Well, thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Adventures of Pipe Man on W4CY Radio.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.